The novel is set in 1956. The fact is that we have a history, even if most of it was erased.
Standing tall before Stonewall on the Rainbow Minute.
I thought that was very important to be openly lesbian in the parliament in Guatemala, because it's the first time that that happened. It's the first time that the community has a voice.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. LGBTQ asylum seekers are forced back into a queer-bashing Kenyan refugee camp. Characters and rabble-rousers pave the way to Stonewall, and a grassroots Guatemalan lesbian feminist takes off the gloves. All that and more this week, because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Jessica Andrea.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending June 22, 2019. Kenya's government has returned dozens of LGBTQ refugees to the anti-queer internment camp from which they had fled. According to multiple reports, armed police officers rousted 76 refugees from safe houses in the capital city of Nairobi on the evening of June 19th. LGBTQ people and several children were among the refugees who were put on buses back to the camp in Kakuma. The government claims that refugees should be living in camps, and if they reside outside of camps, it should be with appropriate documentation. That, according to the United Nations Refugee Agency. The agency had helped move the refugees out of the Kakuma camp, where many had suffered violent anti-queer attacks by other refugees. Tens of thousands are housed in the sprawling camp in the northwestern part of Kenya, many from other countries in the region with homophobic societies. A small group of queer refugees held a pride gathering in the camp last year that ignited a wave of violent assaults. Camp officials told the LGBTQ people in December that they could no longer protect them. Many relocated refugees experienced anti-queer threats or violence in Nairobi and were forced to flee to other safe houses in the city before this week's roundup. One widely quoted refugee fleeing anti-queer violence in his native Burundi used the pseudonym Frank. The BBC noted scars on Frank's face that he said came from vicious attacks in the camp. He said, "Wherever we have lived, we face homophobia because of our orientation. We don't know where to flee to." The UN Refugee Agency has promised to protect the LGBTQ people who have been forced back into the Kakuma camp. Applying for asylum and permission to resettle is an arduous process that can take more than a year. Interviews are reportedly only scheduled every 6 months. Kenya's High Court upheld the criminalization of consensual adult gay sex in late May. Convictions can bring up to 14 years in prison. World Refugee Day was observed on June 20th.
The Prime Minister of Malaysia told an audience at the UK's Cambridge Union on June 16th that he didn't understand gay marriage. Dr. Mahathir Mohamad said in response to a question after a speech, "Marriage is about producing children. I think rights have limits. There's no such thing as an absolute right to do everything." Mahathir has been in power off and on in Malaysia since 1981. He retired in 2003, but was returned to office in 2017. He has repeatedly called LGBTQ rights a Western value. Pink News reported that Mahathir also drew the ire of Jewish groups for anti-Semitic remarks during his speech. Mahathir leads a Southeast Asian Muslim-majority country that is becoming increasingly more repressive in its treatment of LGBTQ people. Inflammatory rhetoric from several government officials and high-profile religious leaders has fueled the fire. Violent police raids of known gay establishments are becoming more frequent, and there have been public canings for violations of Islamic law for expressions of consensual adult same-gender affection. Longtime Mahathir political rival Anwar Ibrahim was jailed from 1999 until 2004 on allegedly trumped-up charges of having sex with one of his male staff members. It's widely believed that Anwar will eventually replace the 94-year-old Mahathir as prime minister. According to Gay Star News, Anwar said in a speech last month that Malaysia must never bow down to Western pressure on LGBTQ rights.
U.S. President Donald Trump now has a certifiable homophobe to lead a little-known federal commission on religious liberty. Family Research Council President Tony Perkins has been elected to chair the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. Perkins' Family Research Council has been identified by the Southern Poverty Law Center as an anti-queer hate group. Its agenda includes support for the debunked conversion therapy that promises to make queer people straight. The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom was established in 1998 as part of the International Religious Freedom Act. Its purpose is to use international standards to monitor religious freedom violations globally and to make policy recommendations to the President, the Secretary of State, and Congress. Members of the commission are appointed by the President and congressional leaders from both parties. Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell nominated Perkins to the commission, and its members voted him chair. During his long tenure with the Family Research Council, Perkins condemned the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and claimed that the U.S. Supreme Court's marriage equality ruling would lead to the teaching of immoral sexuality in public schools. Perkins lines up with conservative Christians who strongly oppose a woman's right to choose. He has also made inflammatory anti-Muslim comments that lead some to question just which religions he wants to defend.
Nick Fish of American Atheists noted that Tony Perkins cares about two things: cementing Christian supremacy across the globe and protecting the ability of religious fundamentalists to weaponize their religion against atheists, LGBTQ people, women, and religious minorities. The Human Rights Campaign's David Stacey charged that, once again, the Trump-Pence administration has taken a nonpartisan commitment to religious freedom around the world and turned it into another weapon in their anti-LGBTQ crusade. Democrats in the U.S. House have introduced the Do No Harm Act to protect all minorities, including religious minorities, while also upholding anti-discrimination laws. Even if the symbolic effort passed in the House, it would likely not get the blessing of the Republican-controlled Senate, let alone signed into law by the president. Meanwhile, Puerto Rico Governor Ricardo Rosello has retreated from his support for a religious liberty bill. NBC News reported that Rosello told lawmakers to shelve the bill within hours of a critical letter in the local press by global entertainment icon and gay married dad Ricky Martin. Rosello said the bill provokes the division of our people. The measure would have allowed government workers to refuse to serve someone if they felt that doing so would violate their religious beliefs.
The well-known Gallup poll has published the third in a weekly June Pride Month series examining U.S. views on LGBTQ rights. This week's findings show a clear majority in favor of qualified transgender people serving in the U.S. military. However, opinions were mixed on gender-related bathroom policies. The poll was conducted in mid-May. Gallup notes that, as President Donald Trump's ban on most transgender military service members continues to face legal challenges, 71% of Americans support allowing openly transgender men and women to serve in the military. The survey results come on the heels of a U.S. House vote to deny funding that would be used in any way to implement the Trump trans ban. But as with other pro-queer measures, Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is not likely to allow a vote on the measure from the Democratic Party-controlled House. Trump continues to falsely cite exorbitant medical costs for transgender enlistees as the main reason for the ban, but numerous reports have noted that the Pentagon spends more on Viagra than it does on transgender-related healthcare costs. As would be expected, women were more likely than men to support trans military service, Democrats were more likely than independents or Republicans, and younger people were more likely than older respondents. However, slightly more than half of those surveyed said that people should use gender-specific public restrooms that correspond with their birth gender. 44% supported trans people using the facility that corresponds with their gender identity. The Gallup press release noted that opinions on that issue have remained generally static since the company first asked about it in 2016.
And finally, one of the writers, producers, and directors of the smash TV hit Pose has made industry history. announcing her first-of-its-kind deal for a trans woman of color with a major content distributor, Janet Mock, said in a video tweet that there is potential now with Netflix's worldwide audience to introduce hundreds of millions of viewers to trans people. Mock said that there are a few hush-hush projects that I can't really talk about, but she revealed that one of them is a half-hour drama series and another features a trans woman in college. There's also series set in New Orleans soon after slavery was abolished and a reboot of a classic sitcom. The showbiz publication Variety reported that the three-year contract gives Netflix the exclusive rights to television projects from Mock, along with the first look option on feature films. Netflix Vice President of Original Content, Cindy Holland, called Mock a groundbreaker and creative force who we think will fit right in here at Netflix. TV hitmaker Ryan Murphy is proud of his mentee. Murphy said, "Janet is a cultural force, and the world needs to hear her stories." Mock has also written two best-selling memoirs. She tweeted that her three-year multi-million-dollar agreement with Netflix is so bonkers.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending June 22nd, 2019. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappell, produced by Brian DeShazor, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out Radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Jessica Andrea.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
The right wing and the churches are trying to push back on the recognition of our rights.
She's been doing the pushing for queer rights against powerful odds, and you'll meet her later in the program. But first,
once I had a secret love that lived within the heart of me. All too soon, my secret love became impatient to be free.
Seeing history through a lesbian lens is a superpower bestowed on This Way Out Queer Life and Lit commentator Janet Mason after she read Zonda's fourth Juliana novel called Heaven is to Your Left.
If you dissect the word history, you'll find that most of the word is story. As for the prefix his, it can be replaced with any and all gender pronouns. If you look at U.S. LGBTQ history before the Stonewall Inn Rebellion in 1969, which lasted for 6 nights, when queers of all stripes stood up against a routine police raid and launched the modern LGBTQ movement, you'll find that it had invisibility and survival as its goal. Reading Heaven is to Your Left, the first installment in the Juliana series by Vada, sans mercy press, prompted me to think about this. The novel is set in 1956. The fact is that we have a history, even if most of it was erased. As a lesbian writer, I often think of the advice from the French author and pioneering lesbian feminist thinker Monique Wittig, who wrote, "Remember, or failing that, invent." Monique was telling us how to find our history. In this fourth installment of the Juliana series, which can be read on its own, a lesbian love story is set against the historic backdrop of life in 1956. It is rife with specific details of place, such as snowflakes falling on your face in New York City. It also contains just enough historic detail of that time, including the news that U.S. civil rights icon Rosa Parks refused to sit on the back of the bus in the mid-1950s. The novel tells us that at the same time, it was illegal for LGBTQ people labeled queers, not in a positive way, to exist. The subtext of the novel tells us something more important. Not only did we exist, but we are a part of history. When the two women return from a time in Paris to New York City, they are grappling with the reality of being blackmailed by someone. As the story came to its inevitable conclusion, it landed on me with an emotional thud. There is a term in creative writing called an emotional reality, and this is an example of it. In my reader's mind, Alice and Juliana existed even though they're fictional characters. On a deeper level, this means that we existed. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
At last, my heart's an open door, and my secret love's no secret anymore.
I'm Roman Kalinin from Moscow. You are listening to This Way Out,
the showpiece of the homosexual movement.
Оставайтесь на нашей волне.
Stay on our wavelength.
Back in 1995, we were so afraid to be on the streets, and now to be part of those huge demonstrations is beautiful, and also it's beautiful to see youth is openly there, and also families.
Later in the program, you'll learn how that Guatemalan congresswoman's political work did not start with running for office, just like the LGBTQ rights movement did not start with Stonewall.
Standing Tall Before Stonewall, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. While many credit the 1969 Stonewall riots in New York as the spark that ignited the nation's gay rights movement, pride and courage did not start at Stonewall. The transgender communities in Los Angeles, Philadelphia, and San Francisco were at the front in fighting back against police harassment and arrests. The transgender community stood tall in May of 1959 at Cooper's Donuts on Main Street in Los Angeles. Then, in April of 1965, they, along with others, were denied service at Dewey's Lunch Counter in Philadelphia for wearing nonconformist clothing. The transgender community fought back in San Francisco in 1966 at the two-day riot at Compton's Cafeteria and in 1967 in Los Angeles at the Black Cat Bar. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, John Porter.
Sandra Moran was drumming up the movement for equality long before she became the first openly LGBTQ person elected to Guatemala's Congress. A longtime feminist queer activist artist, she serves on the Human Rights Commission and presides over the Commission on People with Disabilities. Moran spoke at the International Women Deliver Conference in Vancouver, British Columbia, earlier this month, where she introduced herself to our correspondent, Frida Worden.
I'm Sandra Moran, a member of the parliament in Guatemala.
You ran for parliament as an out lesbian. How was that possible in Guatemala?
Well, I've been part of the women's movement, feminist movement, since more than 25 years ago, and I was invited to be part of the list of one political party from the left. And then when I was elected, one of the first thing that I thought that was very important to be openly lesbian in the Congress, because it's the first time that that happened. It's the first time that the community has a voice then and hasn't been easy, but I think we need to open spaces for everyone. And then I have the responsibility to present laws for the rights of LGBT people, but also for the rights of for women, children, and indigenous people.
That's a big portfolio.
It is. Yes. So big, but that's the possibility for all these social movement to have voice in the Congress, and I think has been difficult for everything, but very important.
So when you got into the Congress, at that point, what, the Congress had changed and moved to the left?
No. We are just five from the left. I'm on 158. We are a small group, and we are hoping that for the next election that is happening in June 16, in a few days, we will change a little bit the power in the Congress, hoping that people can vote for the left.
Now, are you running again?
No, I'm not running. My political party decided that no one from us, three of us, are going to be reelected. Then we start talking with other political parties, and finally I didn't got the space to do it. But I will continue working in the movement.
What has been achieved, or what have you attempted to achieve, with respect to LGBT in Guatemala?
Well, I introduced two proposals of law. One is gender identity for trans people, and the second is to recognize as crime the violence that all LGBT people suffer. No one has passed, of course, but the step up was to recognize that happened, to talk about it in the public sense and in the political sense. It's the first time that in the Congress we talk about issues of LGBT people. And then it's very important for the community that finally those issues are discussing in the plenary in the Congress.
So is anybody besides your three party members, has anybody else stepped forward and said this is a good idea to either of those?
Well, no, because as they said, they don't give them votes. Instead, they lose votes. Then people is very conscious about the votes and about the need to maintain their seats. In private sessions, they say, well, I'm with you, I support you, but I cannot say it in public.
Wow. I saw you speaking on YouTube about gay marriage and domestic partnerships. Did you raise that issue? Can you say something about it?
Yeah, I also have the proposal of the law of that. Although from the movement, they don't support totally that proposal. Then I didn't present the proposal because there is a law that undermining the rights that we have, and one part of that law is to prohibit the marriage, the same-sex marriage.
Domestic partnerships, is that a possibility?
No. In that law, they wanted to prohibit domestic partnership, and they want to prohibit marriage. We are discussing that law now, and it's in the moment in Guatemala we have to debate three times the law in order to pass. The law is in the third moment in order to pass, and we are trying and discussing it in the way that they won't have the votes, but. That's the discussion about, and they need 80 votes to pass it, and hoping that they won't have it. And also, we are working together with the social movement for them to say loud that they are not agreeing with that law.
So this is a law that's proposed by the right to prohibit domestic partnerships, as well as it's, and they've already prohibited gay marriage.
Yeah, by the right wing, but also by the churches. Actually, was a law written by the head of many churches, and through the political party was presented in the Congress.
So in general, the atmosphere in Guatemala, is it getting better for gay people or worse?
We have two sizes. First of all, I think it's more openly. And for example, 2 years ago, the march was 25,000 people on the street. And that was a beautiful thing because, I was part of the first demonstration and That wasn't back in 1995, and we were so afraid to be on the streets. And now to be part of those huge demonstrations is beautiful, and also it's beautiful to see that youth is openly there, and also families. And then I feel that that's why the right wing and the churches are so afraid that can be stronger, and then they are pushing back. They're trying to push back the movement and then the recognition of our rights. That's the conflict. That's the struggle. And as we know, it's not just in Guatemala, it's everywhere, you know, the pushing back of the rights of women and LGBT people. And then we have to be stronger, and we have to organize better ourselves, and we have to do networks, no? To make networks, and I'm glad that I'm here, and we just launched the Parliamentarians Group Alliance that we just launched right now. And that's a global group of parliamentarians who are committed for the rights of women, children, and LGBT people.
Wow, excellent. How can we find out more about this Parliamentarians Group?
I'm sure it's going to be announced, and each parliamentary can sign to be part of the group. And also, I'm part of the Indigenous Women Parliamentarians Alliance that we just formed last week in Peru, and I already sent a message to them in order that Indigenous women parliamentarians also can be part of that. Then I believe that group can be a strong platform to continue the struggle and the work that we do in all the parliaments in order to pass the laws that we as women, children, and LGBT people need.
That was Guatemalan Congresswoman Sandra Moran in conversation with Wings producer and This Way Out contributor Frida Worden. Guatemalan Aldo Ivan Davila Morales won election on June 16th to become the country's first openly gay man in Congress. Morales credited the now outgoing Congresswoman Sandra Moran with paving his path to office. Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Christopher Gall and Jessica Andrea, produced by Brian DeShazer, from Janet Mason, John Porter, produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, and from Frida Worden. Doris Day, Katie Lang, and Sandra Moran performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Yavanna Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, Paul Bannon, Richard Merck, and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all of the listener donors who make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078 USA. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on Rainbow Radio, New York, New York, Free Radio San Diego, California, Arrow FM, Masterton, New Zealand, and some 200 stations and other outlets around the world, including this one. Please do stay tuned.